The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.
Now, last week in the Hard Shoulder bookshelf, Katrina O'Sullivan was with me, the author, and she placed Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss. A great read for anybody who has managed to get their hands on it. I'm sure they will agree. So the bar has been set quite high for Alva Smith, the activist and campaigner who's with me now. Pressure's on you now, Alva, after that.
It certainly is, Kieran. And the pressure's on anyway, because I'm sure, like pretty well everybody who comes on, I sort of feel there is this embarrassment of riches and choice. And in a way, my favourite book always depends on what am I thinking of? Where's my life at the moment? What do I remember? Where am I going with things? And as for current reading, there's always about, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on the go. And have I finished any of them? Not necessarily.
All right. OK, we'll work through then the different categories that we've kind of chiseled out for ourselves in this slot. Mm-hmm. And so what book are you going to place on the bookshelf?
Well, I mean, OK, these are very personal choices.
Yes.
And I'm not necessarily saying that everybody needs to go and read them. And I did choose as a book which I think is very important, because it was very important for me at a particular moment in my life. And that is The Second Sex by Simone de Beauvoir. And it was published in 1949, and it's absolutely enormous. So you want a good, strong bookshelf for The Second Sex. But it really is. It was for me when I read it in my early 20s. And bear in mind, I was in UCD. I was doing French studies. So there was a reason for me to read it. But it was pre the days of the women's movement. And this was a book which hit me like an absolute ton of bricks, like a shock. It was a book written by a woman about women, but about new perspectives on women, what women had been doing throughout history, how women had been constantly cast aside, treated as second rate, treated as subordinate, made to feel outside, other, not good enough, how we had been destined and fated always to do the housework. And she has this wonderful phrase that one of the huge difficulties women have is that we were historically always doing work which had to be done again the same way the next day. That doesn't only apply to women, but it was so, everything she said, whether it was about history, about biology, about myths, mythology, she goes into that in a lot of detail, seemed to me to be talking very directly to me as a very young woman in admittedly a very academic environment, but where I could see that people did not take me seriously. You know, they were very nice to me. They were very pleasant to me. But first and foremost, they saw me as some kind of perhaps lesser brain, and also tended to sexualize me immediately, so that what they saw first was not what I was thinking, what I was aspiring to, what I was interested in. And The Second Sex began that process of opening things up. I mean, I have to say, I read it in French. Well, I tried to read it in French because I thought that was what I should do, being in French studies. And I think I understood very little of it first time round. But I did come back to it over the years. And it really opened things. It wasn't the only book that did that, but it was really important.
Does it stand the test of time for somebody reading it today now? As you say, kind of, what was it, the mid-40s it was published?
49.
Will it feel old-fashioned?
Well, you know,
not to age you there now, Alva.
I'm older than the book. So, you know, you could be
and
saying,
you're not old-fashioned.
Well,
so
you could be saying, have I stood the test of time? And I would say, I mean, I think it's a very good question and a very fair one. And in many ways, the ground that Beauvoir covers in the book, people would say, oh, that's very familiar to me. But of course, that wasn't familiar. She opened up the pathways. And I think that's a really important point. And our understanding of human biology has changed. I think our notions or ideas or experiences of sex and sexuality, although she has a really interesting chapter on lesbian sexuality, which I'd never heard of. I mean, and I'm a card-carrying lesbian, but I had never heard of this at the age of 21 or 2. Maybe I was naive. I was a young Catholic girl. I think the area where it seems to me we've gone beyond it is that she talks about women in terms of our gender only. She doesn't really talk about the differences that social class and ethnicity and race and disability and so on and so forth make to your life, whether you're a woman or a man or whether you're non-binary or whatever. So she does not, understandably, maybe, but she doesn't have that sense of intersectionality that I think younger people now think like that.
Yeah.
It's not that you have to learn how to think like that. You just automatically. But I would say, look, that doesn't invalidate the central point that Beauvoir makes, which is to say, look, women and men are born, but you have to learn how to become a woman. You're not born a woman, she says. You become a woman.
Mm.
So she's effectively saying, I suppose, that human beings are born. And I think that is incredibly contemporary, because she's saying even you're not necessarily born a man. You have to become a man. And one of the big things that we have to do nowadays is work with men to undo the kinds of masculinity which we know are destructive and damaging.
We're actually going to be talking about Andrew Tate and all that kind of brand of masculinity after 6 o'clock today, kind of unrelated to this. So it's interesting you mention that. So, I mean, is there a treatise then that, and I'm just kind of basing this on what you've just said, I haven't read this book, that the differences are the kind of the patterns of behaviour that evolved kind of over hundreds and thousands of years, that they were less kind of born of biology or genetics, and that they were kind of born of behaviour that became kind of compounded
kind
as
of culturally
intergenerationally.
And historically, in every way learned, constructed.
And then by extension, they're contrived. So you can kind of undo them?
Well, you can up to a point, except that, of course, I mean, you know, who we are is very deeply, very deeply bound up with that. So you don't, you can't undo a cultural mindset. You can't undo social structures just overnight. And that's true whether we're talking about misogyny, for example, or whether we're talking about racism, or whether we're, you know, whatever we're talking about, you have to work to try, which was, of course, the whole point about the women's liberation movement in the 70s, which was round about the time that I started to read Beauvoir, and to come back to her over the years, because I mean, I really admire anyone who goes out and gets it, borrows it from the library, or buys it to put on their bookshelf. It's a big book, so I advise you start maybe with chapter one, but also then look at her final chapter, which is called The Independent Woman, and that really spoke to me.
Okay, well, listen, a great edition, Second Sex by Simone de Beauvoir. Firmly up on the bookshelf, and it's taken a good chunk of the space thereon as well. It is always difficult, and you said it right at the outset, everyone does, to pick a favourite book. So we always had an honourable mention of something else. What else would you like to mention?
Well, you know, I've loads actually, but I wanted to mention a novel that I absolutely loved, and I probably read it about the same time as I was reading The Second Sex, and that's Jane Austen's Emma. And I mean, you might think, oh, well, that's a rather strange, choice, but because it's very, you know, it ends with marriage, which isn't necessarily happy. Of course, we don't know what happens afterwards. But I absolutely loved the character of Emma. And I mean, it has the best opening line, I think, in most of it. Handsome, clever and rich. That was Emma Woodhouse. And it wasn't that I wanted to be handsome and rich, although I did certainly want to be clever. But the point about Emma in this wonderful, satirical and in many ways very funny, but also deeply serious novel, I think, is that Emma is never silly. She's never frivolous. She is deluded. She is actually wrong because she tries to be a matchmaker. She is arrogant. She's very spoiled. She can't see the man she loves for the nose in front of her nearly until the very end, so to speak. But she is absolutely confident in herself, and she is very independent in her thinking. And as I say, she is never silly. And I grew up in a kind of enclosed middle class environment, like Jane Austen talks about. Different era, but still enclosed and very narrow and very conservative. And it was very hard as a woman to avoid being seen as silly and frivolous. So I just loved Emma. I'm not sure how well it holds up all together with all my political positions. I don't care. I love it. And I love the writing. And the second runner-up was Yvonne Boland's wonderful collection of poems In Her Own Image, which was published in 1980. I was still quite a young woman. But she talked about herself and her body, her experience, her life, in a way that I had never, ever come across in poetry before. And I actually wrote to her. I didn't know her. I wrote to the Irish Care of the Irish Times to say, you have written poems which speak very directly to me. And we met after that and actually spent many years chatting because we lived quite near one another when her children were young and my daughter was growing up as well. And I think those three books are all, when I thought about them afterwards, are all about that point where you're moving out of being a girl into being a woman. And it was really hard back then in the 70s and the 80s. It's hard for other reasons now. But those books speak to me about that whole process. So they're very important to me.
Well, that is why they're worthy of mention. And I'm glad to hear them. What are you reading at the moment?
Oh, golly. Well, a few things. I've just finished reading Colm Tobin, Long Island.
Yes.
I really liked it. One of the funniest lines I've come across in a long time, where this lovely country, well, I don't know, this lovely country man on a dance floor with a woman from the town, and she is directing her around the dance floor like a man driving a tractor. Colm Tobin is such a wonderful writer. It is a sequel, of course, to Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, yeah.
He is so witty, but he is also so... There's a tremendous humanity in Colm, and how he gets inside women's minds, I really don't know, but he absolutely does. It is very much about small town Ireland back in the 1980s. I really recommend it. But the book that, one of the books that's pleasing me hugely at the moment, was actually published in the autumn, is Paula Meehan's collection of poems, The Solace of Artemis. And like a lot of people, I'd have a few poetry collection maybe on the go. It might be there for a year before I'd read it all. But I like that. And this is, I mean, it is just an amazing, amazing book. Artemis was the Greek goddess of the hunt.
The goddess of the chaste and the chaste.
The chaste of the... Kieran, you are a classicist.
There you are now. Look, I even wrote it down. As you said it, I scribbled it down.
Isn't
goddess of the chaste and the
chaste. And nature, the natural world and so on and so forth. And I think this is a wonderful collection that just opens your horizons. It absolutely does. She talks somewhere in it about the glittering chart. And you have this sense of this glittering sky, the sun, the moon, the planets, the earth. She writes about quartzite and gold. And it is the glitter of ice, the coldness of the ice age. And the whole is warmed always by this absolute sense of humanity that she has, this connection with the world and with people. And she is also, I think, for all of that cosmic space that she has, she is so down to earth. She is so, there's nothing fey about Paula Meehan. And I do want to read you just one.
Oh,
and
do.
Absolutely. This is from a poem called Premenstrual Emails. And I just think it's absolutely wonderful. So she's talking about the emails that she manages not to write. When I'm Wired to the Moon, Loony, Tuned and Cheap has a number of stanzas. And then Are the One to the Feminist Scholar, who asked, is there a glass ceiling in Irish poetry? Glass, glass, granite more like. And my own, my chosen task is to chip my way sans serif, stroke by stroke, letter by letter, even on to the final syllable of recorded time, when I'll chisel through to some light at last, and know there is none, can be no avant-garde, it's already been and past, when you read about it in next Saturday's Irish Times. She, you know, she is, and that's a very witty poem. But
chip away sans serif is a great description,
she,
isn't it?
She will just lift you up and bring you into another world, and then say, don't forget the old. She is, as she calls it herself, the memory keeper.
Paula Meehan's poetry collection, The Solace of Artemis. It is worthy of mention, along with Emma by Jane Austen. Second Sex by Simone de Beauvoir. The book, though, that is up on the Irish Folder bookshelf. I'm called a lot of things every day on the show. Classicist, rarely amongst them. So, Alva, it's always good to see you. And we'll have to come in again soon. Alva Smith, the activist and campaigner.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4. The no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.